You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. And today I'm talking to Kate Luzio, who's the founder and CEO of Luminary. And I'm so thrilled to have you on our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We are very, very thrilled to be chatting with you today. I am going to start this episode with the question that we ask all our guests and is just so important to be talking about. What is the biggest challenge facing women in the workplace today? What do you think that is?
One challenge.
All of them. Give us 20.
Yeah.
Go down the list.
You know, I spent, you know, over 20 something years in the corporate workforce before I became an entrepreneur. And I think there's a couple of big things. And by the way, they were a challenge 20 years ago and they're continue to be a challenge. One is continue to be pay parity, right? Women are still making less. We had equal pay day earlier this week. So pay parity and an understanding of where you are and benchmarking within the organizations that we work. Two is visibility and exposure. I think there is still a feeling for women in particular that companies pay and promote on performance versus potential. And that is very different to our male peers. And that a lot of that comes from that visibility and exposure. And three is self-advocacy. So when we do our surveys and research, and I can, you know, point back to my career in finance, but then also as an entrepreneur leading Luminary, is there are a lot of, well, my company doesn't do this. My company isn't looking at this. I don't have this opportunity. A lot of that is company, but I like to say there's a pull, right? Your company's got to be pulling you up, but there's also a push. And so much of that comes down to us as women and women of color being able to advocate for ourselves around what is important for us as we navigate our career path, as we navigate the workforce in general.
That's such a good point. And I always like action when we're talking about this type of things. Like a lot of it feels so out of our control. And so much of it obviously is, and is just historical. Like there are years and years and years of things that happened that are out of our control. Yeah. But I don't know the answer to this. This is something I'm always obsessing about. Like how do we teach women, and love to hear your thoughts. I'm sure you're doing stuff around this but like, how do we teach women? And especially, I mean, something I've been focused on in my career is like, the opportunity at the bottom as well, right? Like you have to come into this world with be given the opportunity to get in and to get this information. And that's a whole other challenge and struggle. That could be a whole episode about that. But are there any, like, what are your thoughts about if someone's listening now and they're just like, I cannot advocate for myself. Like I just don't have the tools. Is there somewhere to start?
Yes. So I'll go back to, again, I use a lot of my corporate life as which is why I started Luminary. One of my original managers in the first bank that I worked for, he wasn't even a manager. He was a mentor of mine. And I had received an email from the CEO about a deal that we did. And I was leading the dealer on the deal team. And he said, print that out. And I said, why would I print it out? He said, print it out, one, because you want to be able to remember that you were recognized and acknowledged for this accomplishment. And in 5 years and 10 years, you're not going to remember those, right? So this starts your good list. And these are things that achievements, accomplishments that we're proud of. And I think women, again, don't recognize all of what we bring to the table. Even when someone tells us, we sort of go, oh, thanks for the compliment, moving on. And I still do that. But that started me a very long time ago of creating this good list. And what that morphed into, and I think is very tactical and actionable, is when you feel like you've accomplished something, someone recognizes you for something, write it down. Right? Why is that important? One, it's great. It makes you feel really good. And you can look to that. Two, as you're preparing it for a mid-year or a year-end performance, you can point back to that, right? These are concrete examples of achievements and accomplishments. These are factual so that you can advocate for yourself. So whether that is, you know, a great review, more compensation, a bigger role, expanded opportunity, whatever that looks like, you've got that factual concrete evidence. By keeping that list, and you can, one, keep it for yourself. You can also choose to share that with your manager on a regular basis, right? So that at that mid-year, year-end, whatever that conversation, your manager said, well, I don't remember you doing this. Well, yes, I sent this to you every other week in my sort of daily accomplishments or whatever that looks like. We often think we're bragging and I don't want to bother my manager. It's an email. They can choose to look at it or not, but it's something that you can point to and you can cut and paste that right into your reviews. You have that list and talking points to be able to have those conversations with whoever it is. And I think that self-advocacy can start with, I've got to get comfortable talking about myself, whether it's your first job, all the way to your, you know, your fifth, your sixth, your 30, your 40th year in your career. It's still something that I truly think that women and women of color struggle with.
That's amazing advice. I think you're right. Like the bragging. I mean, that's something we, I don't even know if we've ever talked about this on the podcast, like, right. To feel like, oh, I'm bragging. Like, and guess what? A man would do that.
Yeah. And, like, and it's not bragging if it's right. Based on facts, right? Right? If I came into this podcast and said, Julie, I feel like I'm incredibly resilient and I stopped it there. You go, well, what does that mean? Like, why are you resilient? Or if I chose any word, right? Julie, I feel like I'm extremely successful and stopped it. If I give you examples of why I'm resilient or why I feel I'm successful or what I've accomplished, you're more likely to listen, remember, and action that, and maybe talk about me in another conversation, right? If you're a manager, you're much more a mentor or a sponsor, you're much more likely to talk about someone else when they're not in the room. If you have that context, and we teach at Luminary a course and a workshop called I Am Remarkable. It actually started at Google many, many years ago. It's no longer a Google initiative, and we have many of our staff are trained facilitators. It's all about getting comfortable with talking about ourselves. And so much of that also comes down to confidence, but it doesn't matter where you're at in your journey. It doesn't matter if you've just started, you're just starting a company, you're a new people manager. This is a muscle memory that we have to practice. Like, we have to invest time in advocating for ourselves. And so much of what we just talked about around the challenges that face us, pay, invisibility, exposure, opportunity, if we are using our voice and using those accomplishments and those facts, it's going to help better prepare us and build that business case on why we deserve more money or why we deserve the better opportunity, why we need more invisibility, et cetera, et cetera. And I will tell you, as someone who's used this tool quite a bit, that exposure and that visibility becomes much more organic. The mentorship by people around you, the sponsorship becomes much more organic.
If you haven't already, I think you should make a t-shirt that says it's not bragging if it's based on facts. Cause I was like, yes, it is not bragging if it's based on
right?
facts. Like put it on a shirt, put it on a shirt.
All right. I'm writing that down.
Okay. Put it on your ideas list. In all your spare time, you're going to become a sweatshirt and t-shirt mogul. No, it's all great. And I think one thing you said, I mean, not that any of us are saying don't learn from men, like only look to women and female mentors, but you know, talking about that original boss, and you come from a finance background and you're probably working with a lot of men, like, and I actually recently have joined this peer group. So I have a content marketing agency, and I have a peer group now that was assigned to me. So I didn't choose. And I was like, there are not as many women as I would, yeah. women owners as I would have liked. And then I went to the meeting and I was like, oh, like I learn a lot from women. I'm talking to women all the time. This is like my focus. But some of the things the men do or say, I'm like, wow, it's just a different universe, right? Whether it's something they've been raised with this specific
totally.
Way. Yes. So it is really, and it's so amazing that you had a mentor, a male mentor who was giving you this incredible advice. But I also think that's been like a new little insight for me to be like, also look to the men to see some of these things.
I talk about this often. I really only had male mentors and sponsors, given I was in finance. You know, again, it's a different world, although it's still pretty male dominated. I really had incredible male mentors and sponsors. They were the ones that were sort of watching and saying, who's going to make me as a mentor, sponsor, manager look good, right? Because let's be this, and this is not all altruistic. But two, I think they were very adept at looking around and seeing who was visible, who had hard work, ethics, all of the things, and having what I call great work product and outcomes. Where I had a different experience with women, and it's likely because they were older and were told this in their career, it was, Kate, you need to tone it down. You need to not be as passionate. You need to dress differently. You can't speak as loudly, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, I don't want to fit into a mold of someone else. I absolutely think knowing your audience is 100% critical around who you are, but it doesn't mean you have to change who you are. It means you adapt to that audience and you pull different levers around who you're talking to and how you're talking to them. I learned so much, Julie, by those men that I worked with, some good, not some good.
I have two brothers,
and I had a very strong, I have a very strong father who kind of pushed me. And so it's the same when advocating for my compensation. I watched what the guys did. And I said, well, if they're doing it and they're talking about their comp, then I'm going to do the same. So, because it doesn't matter if I'm a whatever gender I am, this is my career. I tell everyone that will listen, nobody cares about your career more than you do. No company out there, no boss, no investor. If you're a business owner, nobody cares about your career, your business, or your path more than you do. So be in the driver's seat at all times.
That's another shirt. I'm telling you, we're gonna nobody cares about your career as much as you do or more than you do. Yeah, and it's funny. Like I wasn't on board. You remember the whole like phenomenon? Like this is probably a while ago now. There was like lead like a man, work like a man, and it's like no, you can still be a woman. You can be yourself.
Totally.
But there are things that we're not taught that we can learn. I think it's really, I think your background, like, is so, your path has been unique, which I want to talk about next in terms of like, you've had that perspective on both sides of things. And so you can create like a holistic image of it.
And someone actually, I love that you even brought that up, like the lead like a man. I was meeting with one of our, so we have a B2C and a B2B business. Our B2B business is quite large. And I was with one of our private equity clients. This is going back like 18 months, and I was in a meeting, and one of the women, I was facilitating a conversation, and she said, so you're telling me to be like a man? And I said, no, but you are in a very heavily male dominated industry. It's changing much slower than the rest of finance. You have to think sometimes like a man. But the way you present, the way you lead, the way you are you. It is about being in the game and playing, right? And some people will say, well, I don't want to play the game. Well, guess what? You're already a player, right? Doesn't mean you have to play
choice.
It, right? You don't have a choice. Doesn't mean you have to play it. That's it. You don't have to play it. You know, you don't have to be a bad player. You don't have to, you know, have sharp elbows, but you have to play. And this goes back to that. Nobody cares about your career more than you do. So, you know, be out there, be visible. The other thing that I love to say outside of like, it's not bragging if it's based on facts, is accomplishments do not speak for themselves. We often, women of color, those from underrepresented communities are told, you know, keep your head down. Don't worry. Eventually you'll get tapped. Your accomplishments will speak for themselves. They will not. This is why men have always been better at talking about themselves, because no one told them for the last 200 years, keep your head down. Don't worry if your accomplishments will speak for themselves. People were telling them, no, talk about yourself. Talk about your accomplishments. That's how you get the raise. That's how you get the big job. So we have got to take a lesson in that, but we can do it in our own way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love for you, I mean, you've alluded to it. I think it's so important to all your advice, like to talk a little bit about your journey. Feel free to go back as far as you want. Sometimes early childhood is relevant to your career journey or like your summer job at the camp, summer camp. But, you know, what was your journey from at least like internships and first jobs and then where you are today?
So much does start with my childhood. Again, I have two brothers. I was in the middle. I played sports from a very young age. It sort of wasn't a choice. It was just like, you're playing and you're with your brothers. And I think that was for me, all of the things that I learned from like early athletics all the way through high school and then into college was paramount for who I became and who I was. And it still is to this day. You know, I had no interest. Banking wasn't even any, I was terrible at math. I don't have that kind of brain. I was a poli sci major in college. I did all the internships, you know, in government. And then I graduated in the late 90s and said, I don't want to do this. Got a job at a nonprofit. Very quickly realized I needed to create wealth, and that was not going to be the way for me to do that if I wanted to buy a house. And so a great mentor at the nonprofit said to me, go out and work in the real private sector, get a job, work really hard, make some money. You can always give back in different ways. It was like mind-boggling to me. I was 22, 23 years old. I got a job at a startup. It was the original internet boom for the young listeners out there. And for the next several years, I worked really hard and learning different skills, being in true business, working in a startup. I was getting my master's degree at Georgetown at night, and a bank recruited me. And I thought, a bank? I'm terrible at math. And they said, we love your profile. And I had never heard that before. What's my profile? You've traveled, you've worked abroad, you are more well-rounded, and we think you'd be a great fit. We can teach you the technical stuff that you need to have. Okay, I'll try this for a couple of years. This will be cool. And then almost 20 years later, I was still doing it. And I worked at three of the largest banks in the world, Bank of America, JP Morgan, HSBC. I worked around the world. I worked in Mexico. I worked in China. I worked in London. And I had regional roles and global roles. And all of those were things that I wasn't 100% qualified for. It was the guy coming and saying, hey, Kate, there's this role. We think you'd be great. Me going home and going, what? I don't have these skills. I've never done this. And then saying, wait a second, but I can learn this. Just like I left government, went into tech, and now I'm in banking. And so that risk-taking is a big part of my journey from the very beginning. And I think still as an entrepreneur, but so much of what I did throughout my corporate career was, you know, taking calculated risk, being open to opportunities, but then building, and I can't underscore this enough, building relationships. Mm-hmm. Because it's so important internally to your organization, externally, and having a very broad network that you can tap into as you're navigating, whether it's that next job or whatever you're going through in your life during that time, to thinking about the next stage of your career or other things that you want to do or taking a break, whatever it is, that those relationships are paramount, and they have been paramount. All those, the mentors that I talked about, there were five white men that I still talk to and I still go to for advice, and that I am completely out of finance.
That's fabulous. As you're talking, like, you know, we call it networking. I'm like, if we brand networking as just relationship building, to me, I mean, it's nothing different. It's literally the same thing. But I think the piece that you're talking about, that we do talk about, you know, even in this, on this podcast and around career advice about, yeah, like the maintaining of relationships, that gets a little lost. I feel like people are like, networking is like going to this event, meeting all the people, giving the card. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm dating myself. I don't know. Does it still happen? But like, even virtually giving the card and doing this, and it's like, it's really just relationship building, maintaining the relationship.
Yes.
And that's what, I mean, I'm like, number one, if you're going to do anything, especially when I talk to young women who are like, what can I do? I'm not, you know, I'm even a sophomore in college. I'm like, start
now.
Talking, just start talking to people. Like, I don't know, just start talking, go on LinkedIn and reach out. People are going to ignore you. Some people are going to be so excited to hear from you. Just start talking.
And you're exactly right. If you're in college, the easiest way to start that is to reach out to alumni, because there's an immediate affinity, right? If anyone from Maryland, which is where my undergrad is from, reaches out to me and says, I'm a student at Maryland, I will take that email. I will make time, because there's an affinity. We both are Terps, right? The same with Georgetown. And I think that although this current generation is much more advanced, I think, than when I went to college around networking and skills building and every, I mean, they're just so much more advanced. That's the society and sort of technology, but it is not about just handing the business card. It is also not just about asking for something. any relationship is a two-way street. And I think when you network at Luminary, we like to say we take the work out of networking, because it is a two-way street. It is finding common ground. It whether that is, I love your outfit, to I used to be in finance, you're in marketing. Hey, maybe we have some people that are connected. You've got to find that common ground and build a relationship. If you go in it from a networking perspective and it's just about you and what you can get out of it, it will seem like work and it will not be fun and it will be awkward and uncomfortable. But if you know, reframe the conversation in your head and that this is about building a relationship, that person, maybe not today, but maybe over time, we will have reciprocity in the relationship. That's how I look at those.
Absolutely. My husband's also a proud Terp. So we already have and I'm from Maryland. So we're already here we are. We're doing the relationship building. I'm not going to call it networking. We're taking the work out of the network.
Well, that's a whole, we have to talk about that. Go Terps.
We might need a second hour. Yes. Very, I'm from Maryland. As you know, we, no matter what, we have a lot of excitement around Maryland, around our flag. We are excited about the Terps.
You love your flag. I love your flag. I'm on the board of Maryland and I will say forever, I mean, as I am involved, it's not just about the school. It's the whole DMV area is just amazing. And again, we could talk about that, but for years and years. But see, right there, just by me saying I went to Maryland and you're like, my husband's a Terp, or I lived in Maryland, or I'm from there. That's an easy place to start a conversation, I'm using air quotes here, to network, right? Because you're coming from a place of sort of, hey, let's get to know each other versus, Julie, I need something from you. By the way, I may need something from you over time and you hopefully will need something from me, but that's called a relationship.
Yep, absolutely. We can keep in touch. The one thing you said that I think, maybe I'm wrong, but one of the most underutilized things is the alumni office at your school.
Yes.
I always say this, even to people who graduated, you can reach out, but like you said, people really just feel a warmth towards people who went to, it's kind of funny because it's like, oh my God, I went to BU. It's like, there's 30,000 kids.
So did my partner.
This was meant to be, but it's so huge. And I meet someone who went to BU. Truly, there is such a slim chance I would know them, know anyone who knew, right. But it's a shared experience. And I'm like, absolutely, you can have my time. What do you want to talk about? Whatever. So I think you're totally right, whether in school or went to school, especially now where it's a very hard market. If you want a little bit of a in to get, get contacts with people,
even if you're 20, 30 years into your career, I'll give you a real live example. Last week we hosted our Women's History Month Summit. And I came off one of the sessions and a woman came up to me and she introduced herself. She's like, I'm a relatively new Luminary member, blah, blah, blah. She said, and I went to Maryland. Now, she didn't say this is what she does and can she have 30 minutes? She said, I went to Maryland. And whatever she does, now I'm going to go, well, wait, let's connect on that. And then part of that is going to then, what does she need help with? What does she do for her career? What's her business? And the reason she ended up joining Luminary is because she's in transition and trying to figure out her next step. And she wanted a community and networking. And that was an immediate, just in literally 5 seconds, she said that. It is that shared experience, no matter if she went to school, in the 80s or just graduated last year, there's a shared experience that you can build on.
Absolutely. And, if you just generally that entire theme, if there are certain things, if you look at someone's, you're going for an interview, you look at someone's LinkedIn and there's enough, you see they lived in this place that you lived or they had this hobby, it might not be the school, but I think those are little things that you can do to really.
Yeah. Or a team. I go on people's and say, oh, they're a huge, Mets fan. Or before I did Luminary in my finance background, I always, my whole career was with clients. And so I would always try to find out a little bit more about my clients and what, they were passionate about, so that if it was the first time I'm meeting them, yes, we can talk business, but I want to get to know them. And I hopefully they want to get to know me versus just transaction. This is not just transactional. We're building a relationship and hopefully it's long-term. And I think we're so busy these days and everything is so convenient and instantaneous, we forget about that. And so networking does become a chore because we're supposed to think about, I got to churn as many new contacts as possible. No, no, no. You need to create real contacts and build those relationships. Because if you have 50,000, 100,000, whatever, LinkedIn connections, that doesn't mean you can talk to all of them or tap into them or they can tap into you. There's going to be a core foundation within that that you really must nurture and also maintain.
Sure, absolutely. Tell us about Luminary. So where was the rest of that journey? I definitely want you talking. We're here during Women's History Month. We want to talk about, I mean, we're always talking about women. So this is specifically a women's focused business. So it's the perfect timing. Like where did you go from there? And then I want you to definitely talk about the business and everything. I think it would be really interesting for our listeners to hear.
Yeah. And I think it's also important. I say this often, you know, I didn't leave the last job that I had in banking because I didn't love banking. I still love banking. And I always say you have many, many careers in our lives. I will likely at some point in my 40s, we'll go back to banking because I really think there's a lot more work I could do there. But at that point in time, five and a half years ago, what I was seeing was in the workforce, in particular in finance and the companies that I worked for, the needle wasn't moving. The numbers weren't moving fast enough for women. And it wasn't just women at the C-suite, because I think we tend to focus so much on the C-suite and not everything else. And not everybody will be in the C-suite or wants to be. Simultaneously, you were seeing record numbers of women and women of color starting businesses. And they didn't have the same level of access as their male peers, and particularly white male peers. And it was the same for women in the workforce. Then you have this whole other audience that's in transition thinking about the next step. And so that got me thinking, and I wrote a business plan. And I also was watching what was happening at the time with The Wing and WeWork and other clubs, if you will. I knew that I wanted to build a co-working space or a club, but I wanted to build the community. And you could do that physically. And ultimately, thanks to the pandemic, you could do that virtually. And so that was the catalyst. I wrote that business plan. 8 months later, we launched. And we've always had this mission around advancing women in the workforce, regardless of professional journey. So if you run an agency, you work for an agency, you're starting your own business, you have a side hustle, you're coming back from, you know, maternity leave, it doesn't matter what professional journey you're on. This community will support you through collaboration, through content, through programming, and through connection. The other piece of that is our mission is to advance women, but I can't do that without men. Going back to my experience with those mentors and what I had both in athletics and then in my finance career. So we've always been gender inclusive. And why is that important? Because that has created for us so much allyship for all genders. And it really illustrates and highlights, in particular for men, the challenges that we talked about in the very beginning of the podcast, right? What are the big challenges that face women? And then the other piece is, as we think about that mission, I don't want to just do it one-to-one with those individual members, which we do. I want to do it in companies like mine, where I want to have real impact, very broad, a big reach. And so we've always had a B2C where we have individual members, but no application process, because also we've been cut out of so much because of that in society. So remove that barrier. And then we have a B2B business, which is where we work with now over 100 companies in supporting their employees and their initiatives around talent development, DE&I, et cetera.
Fabulous. That's incredible. Well, congratulations. That is
Thank you.
Amazing. And when you decided to leave finance to do this, did you leave and then develop this, or was it all? I'm always interested in the founder story of like, what's the tipping point is so important. And when I started my business, people were like, you'll know when it's time. So I'd love to hear what your tipping point was.
Yeah. Everyone thinks that I had this idea when I was still in finance. I didn't have any brain capacity for anything else but my job. I had a global role and I had a several billion-dollar P&L and thousands of employees. So I was focused on my job. And that was one of the reasons when I decided to say I'm taking a break from banking was I couldn't think about anything else, and it wouldn't have been fair to the companies that I worked for or myself if I tried to kind of I'm a great multitasker, but not in that way. And so one of my mentors was like, you know, what about taking a break and a step back and just seeing what else you want to do? Where do you want to have impact? Because you were all about impact. It was like a light bulb. And in the next 6 to 8 weeks, that's when I wrote the business plan. And I was already interviewing for different roles and different things that I was going to do. I thought I was going to do. And then it was like, wait, I go all in 100%. I can't do multiple things. So I wrote the business plan, and we did that. We started with a physical location in New York City, right? And so that was where the magic happens. You come from the programming and the community, the content. And then literally a year later, the pandemic hit. And then we went online. So, you know, lots of lessons there, but that was the catalyst. I didn't think about it, but all of the things that I just said around women starting businesses, women sort of stagnating, wanting more, that was all ruminating. And then it just came together in a business plan.
If someone listening was like, I want to start my own business right now, it's obviously very broad because there's many different ways and many different sizes of business, but what are some of your like key pieces of advice? What are things that you wish you had known or that you've really learned are so important when, you know, taking the leap?
Yeah. So emotionally, I underestimated how hard it was going to be and how lonely and how isolating. And I say that because it is hard, and we're 5 years in, and I talk to founders that are 20 years in, and it's hard, right? It's still your business, whether you've raised money or not, and you have investors. I don't. I self-funded the business, and I'm the sole founder and investor and owner. So it's all on me, right? So that brings its own other complications. But I think emotionally, I wish I had talked to more people about the journey and the emotional roller coaster. Putting that aside, the things that I would say for any business owner, and I teach this every month, I taught it yesterday, is you've got to have a business plan. In life, you need planning, right? You put a plan in for most things in your life. Most people don't fly by the seat of their pants. They have a plan. So for a business, you need a business plan. You need financial projections. Right? You need a North Star as to where you're going, what you want to build, how you want to build it. If you eventually want to sell it, exit it, what does that look like? And I think very few, and I know this because I teach it every month, do that. It's a lot of work, but it will prepare you for the ups and downs. It will prepare you for a recession or a pandemic or a market challenge. It will prepare you for opportunities as well. So I tell every founder, they must have that. They also should have 3 critical people in their corner outside of their friends and their moms and dads, as a banker, a business banker, an accountant, and a lawyer, because you don't know what you don't know. And you need, again, to be prepared. So start with a foundation that you can build on. And yes, you can pivot and adapt, but those are the critical things I know that business owners need to build a business. And the last is, it is very risky. We know the stats around entrepreneurship. If it was easy, everybody would do it. So you're taking probably the biggest risk of your life by starting a business. You better be prepared, and you better have a plan, because I don't know many business owners that start a business to go into debt. They start it to have flexibility, to make more money, to create something, to change. So that's when I think of starting a business. Those are fundamentals that everyone should have.
It's great advice. And one thing, just in terms of the support system, I think that, you know, when I started my business, I like really looked at resources, because I bootstrapped, like I didn't take funding. And for example, like, in New York
stiletto City. Stiletto strap, because it's harder as women.
I love it. It's so true. It is. That's great. I love that. So I, you know, for example, New York City, I was able to see a lawyer through the Department of Labor. Like it's so much has changed in the pandemic. I would say, if you're listening, like, you know, this might not all still be true. This is also over a decade ago. But, you know, the lawyer was free. Like, so sometimes I think some of this sounds very overwhelming and like, oh my gosh, I don't have those resources. But there are a lot of resources for especially small business owners, especially if you're doing that, you know, yourself.
So many, and I agree. I absolutely agree. I didn't know because I had never been a business owner, right?
Right.
But we dot if you're in the New York City area, we.nyc. It's women entrepreneurs, so it's just we.nyc. That's their website address. They're a part of Small Business Services. They have lawyers, accountants, bank, all for free. All of these resources are free, and they're city funded. They also can connect you to banks and CDFIs if you need a loan, if you're looking for grants, crowdfunding. And I tell this to whether you're in New York or not, most cities will have small business services that you can tap into for free. All else fails, go to the Small Business Administration, SBA.gov. They will tell you what your state and city will have that you can tap into. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to ask people in your network, right? Goes back to those relationships. Hey, you've got to probably know a founder in there somewhere. What did they do to start? What are those lessons learned? So use that network. That's an easy ask for help. You're not asking them to spend any money. You're not asking them to make a connection. All you're saying is, what did you do? What would you wish you had known when you started that I should know?
Absolutely. That's great advice. And like, I mean, I think one thing that's interesting about relation network, we're always using air quotes when we're saying networking on this podcast episode, but relationship building, it's like, don't forget to like take out what you put in. So I think a lot of times it's like, okay, we learn about we should make sure we're meeting with these people and asking the right questions and don't take too much and blah, blah, blah. But it's like the whole point of the thing, and you know, your day will come that you need to call in your favor, and then that is the time. Don't be shy. I mean, this is all coming full circle. Don't be shy. Don't lose your confidence. Like, call in the, I mean, it's not even a favor. You have worked towards
Worked,
this.
yeah. And the worst someone can say, I say this, the worst someone can say is no.
Is no.
Right. And you know this in building your own company. Like, not every client's going to go, yes, I want to work with you. Okay. The worst someone can say, and you then move on. Right. Or you say, okay, a no to me is a maybe. You never know where that can turn into a yes. But you can't let fear hold you back. And you will, fumble your words, especially when you're, making those asks, especially early on or talking about yourself. But practice makes perfect. You've got to keep at it.
What did you say? You take a no as a
Yeah,
maybe?
I t every no is always a maybe.
Another shirt.
There
I'm telling you. I might just
you
start this business.
go,
I'll give you a commission. Layoffs are just so prevalent right now. I mean, you know, this is New York Women in Communications, especially in the media industry. It's like a particularly challenging time. And something that I think is just so scary when you look at the landscape, it's like the landscape is shrinking. So it's not like you lose your job, you move to another job, as used to be the case. So we're, you know, being creative and trying as much as we can on this podcast to talk about in a productive way, like the advice that we can give either to stay vigilant if you, I don't not like if you are going to get laid off, just that we should all be staying vigilant. No one should not be kind of preparing, right? And then also, if you have been laid off, like the advice for how to proceed essentially and kind of what are the next steps. So I would love, I mean, you have amazing advice and you're talking to so many women. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that in terms of like what every woman should be doing every day at work to kind of be continually in the mix. And then beyond that, if it does happen to you, on our last episode, like we had this fabulous career coach, Phoebe Gavin, and you know, she talked a bit about like taking a beat and not just like rushing into the next thing. So I think there are some interesting like next steps you actively can take. So love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, and I totally agree with her. I think taking a beat is important, right? Rushing in won't help you. You may, again, that fear is like, I gotta get the next thing. I think there's also a too long of a beat, right? And that's also just perception by other companies, like you've been out for too long.
Right.
If you're in a company today, right, and you are worried about it, that you've seen this or the industry, or just to prepare yourself. We have a again. I teach us a workshop and I facilitate what we call the four R's. So you've got to think about, and there are many R's, but these are the ones in this situation or this kind of scenario. Do you have an updated resume? Most people don't. They just, you know, I've been working. Why do I need to update my resume? One, you should always have your update your resume updated, because even internally, if there are opportunities that you want to take advantage of, or someone does tap you on, you want to have an updated resume or at least a bio. And that should also correlate to what's on your LinkedIn. Right.
I was going to ask you that. Like, I think LinkedIn is almost more, not, I mean, we all need
totally. Everyone goes there first.
I honestly, like, to give away my secret, if someone's applying for a job, I might not ever look at your resume, but I will.
Yeah, you go to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you see what's on there. Absolutely. So that's number one. That's the first R. Two is then, as you're thinking about that updating of your resume or bio, or whatever, is think about the results that you have, your accomplishments, your achievements, all of the things that make you in that role, or potentially the next role, or in another organization. What are the results, your achievements, again, that you are proud of, that you can point to, whether it's quantified by numbers or clients, it doesn't matter. You've got to have what's that's part of your story around your results. Third, reputation. What are you known for? Right? And ask. It's so fun, actually. I love doing this exercise with our community and saying, if your manager picked one word to say about you, what would it be? And you should see what people say. It's really, now say, what would your peer say? What would your friend say? Oftentimes, it's a very similar word, right? Because that's what you're known for. So really lean into sort of building up your reputation. Part of that ties to your results and your resume. And the last is relationships, right? Who can you tap into internally and externally should that scenario change? Who knows you in the organization? Because if you want to stay and you love the culture, but this job has been made redundant, or there's a layoff, but you want to stay in the company, who do you know that you can talk to that can help advocate for you in another role? The second part of that is, when you have left, been displaced, you've decided to leave for whatever reason, lots of people will come to me and say, well, I need to, you know, who should I talk to? I always say, make a top 10 list of companies you want to work for. Even if you don't know the exact role, the top 10 list of companies in the why, and then go into your LinkedIn and see if any of your connections work for those companies. Not to go ask them, hey, can I get a job? But to go ask them, hey, what's the culture like? I'd love to learn more. By the way, could you make an introduction? I'm looking, even if there's no role, I always use the term exploratory conversation. People need to get to know you before it's just the resume. So make that top 10 list. And then again, tap into your relationships, old bosses, old peers. Have they moved to different organizations in the similar industry? And if you are making a 180, right, then do your due diligence around what's in the market. What does that industry look like? Is it shrinking? Is it growing? Is it need innovation? And then your transferable skill sets, what are they that can be applied regardless of the role, regardless of the industry?
It's such great advice. It's amazing. And I mean, I get outreach like that all the time where someone says, oh, either someone close to me or that I haven't heard from in forever, I saw that you're connected to this person on LinkedIn. And I always like when they're like, do you really know them? Because we understand that not all LinkedIn relationships like are real. And if I, you know, sometimes I'll be like, no, I like their LinkedIn.
Yeah, we're just connected.
Right. We're just connected. And who knows how we even got connected. It was, you know, 7 years ago, but I'm happy to make that intro. And I always appreciate that. Like, you did the work, you did the research, not just, hey, Julie, you know, can you do this? Can you figure out who you know? And it's like, you figured out who I know. And now my job's easy. Like, if I know them, great. I'll connect you. Sure.
Right. And it goes back to, and if that intro doesn't pan out, that I always caveat things by saying, likely these people are very busy. So give them time. Yeah. But don't just say, can I meet with you for 30 minutes? Say, here's why I would like to meet with you for 30 minutes or 15 minutes. That context is so important in any kind of reach out situation, especially as we're talking about utilizing your network for looking for a new role or job or opportunity. And I, you know, Women in Communications, right? Luminary, places like that. Those are also great places to say, here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm looking for. Do you know anything or anyone that might fit? If you've got that list already, great. But even just saying, this is the kind of role I'm looking for, I'm sort of if you're open to anything, or if you're open to different kinds of companies, if you're open to the startup world, have those conversations. People think that, someone told me once, like, no one knows what you're thinking, right? We don't have ESP. So you've got to put it out there. If you want to be on a board, you better be telling people, I want to be on a board, so that someone is saying, hey, by the way, Kate Luzio wants to be on a public board. See, I'm putting it out there. So you've got to put it out there, right? People don't know if you're, again, goes back to, you've got to talk about yourself and advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. And how do you feel about the follow-up? Like, in terms of, I love when people follow up with me. You sent me an email. I'm so busy. You do too. And what do you think like the right cadence? Because I have people, I'll stumble upon an email that's a year old that had a question from someone who I'm like, oh, I wish I got to this, but it just sat at the bottom of my inbox. It never floated up. And I kind of think, I have to say, well, it couldn't have been
that important
to them. But I think the reality is more they're thinking, oh, I don't want to bother you. Like, I don't think they're like, oh, this isn't important, I'm not going to follow up. So I'd love your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my whole team knows this. Like, you have to follow up, right? If you're asking for something or of someone, or if it's a client up, you've got to follow up. That's part of your job. If you can't just leave it to them, we're very busy. Like, we are at capacity. We have busy lives. Well, you don't even know what's happening in their personal life, but you're just focused on that one thing. Follow up. I think I always use the three strikes and I'm out. So I will follow up three times if it's that important. I don't like to badger. By the third one, I will say, listen, I don't want to bother or pester you. I thought, especially if you've met them or somebody connected you, there was a reason we were connected. You go fall back on that. And just don't take it personally, right? Because again, that person, you never know what's happening. They could be very busy. They could have a lot going on in their lives. And by the way, you may in a year come back to that email. And that's the other thing, that no, every no is a maybe. In a year's time, even if they never responded, or they go back and say, hey, I'm refreshing here, would love to still connect if you're open to it, and put the ball in their court.
I love it. I do it all the time. I'm like, I use Boomerang for my email. I say, bounce back in 6 months if I haven't heard you. And I have like the slow roll, right? So I email, if I don't hear from you in 4 days, I'll follow up, and then if I don't hear from you in a week. But I think three strikes seems pretty, like,
yeah,
you're not missing that. Someone followed up with me three times and I wanted to talk to them, I would.
Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think another thing that you said earlier, just that I really thought about, is to me it's also about being front of mind. So like, to keep, not just with the emailing, but like generally, if you want, when someone's, and I think about this all the time with my business, even, for like, I use this example, it's like, when someone needs a content marketing agency, I want them to think of me. Now, maybe 99% of the time they don't need it. So there's a lot of that, like, just communication, like you said,
yes,
or just keeping going. Because if you email them or talk to them or reach out, even if they didn't write you back 6 months ago, and then they're like, oh, I'm hiring for this job. Like, they weren't hiring at that time. So that front of mind is so valuable. And that is part of the, I think, relationship building that's undervalued, in terms of, even if you're not like actively talking all the time,
yes,
just like getting into someone's, being in someone's brain is very valuable.
Or like, even, I think even if, forget about like, you want something, you want to connect, you say, hey, I saw this book and it made me think of you and your business. Hey, I ran into someone we're connected with, your name came up. Like, again, it's that, bring some kind of shared experience or some experience that, again, affinity that you think will resonate. You never know. And then, by the way, the world changes so fast. So 6 months, their business, their budget, their role openings, whatever, could have changed dramatically. It takes so little time to do a follow-up.
Absolutely. 1,000% agree. I literally could talk to you all day. Somehow we have run out of time. You talk about follow-up, I'm like, you're going to be hearing from me. Before we wrap, do you have one absolutely, like, your favorite piece of career advice?
Always bet on yourself. I think, and again, particularly for women, women of color, those from underrepresented communities, we tend to second guess ourselves. We tend to sort of put everyone else and ahead of us, advocate for everyone else but ourselves. So bet on yourself, right? This is your career, as I've said multiple times, but bet on yourself. You know yourself better. You know what you bring to the table. So whatever that risk is, whatever that job is, bet on yourself. That's a good t-shirt too.
That's a great bet. Oh yeah, she's writing it down. This is really happening. This business is happening. That's going to be the follow-up. I truly like that. Because even just talking to you, I'm like, even this podcast, I'm like, I don't feel like I even promoted enough myself. I'm like, right. It's my heart and soul. And I get so wrapped up in the details and the work and the busyness of it all. It's a great advice. Where can our listeners find you and your business and anywhere that you want them to find you?
By the way, I think you're an excellent host. And even from the very intro, I was like, wait, she's got to be on the radio with this.
Thank you. My next career.
There you go. We are Luminary. So weareluminary.com, at We Are Luminary, our Instagram. And then on LinkedIn, you can just look up Luminary. And then for me, it's Kate Luzio. I'm on LinkedIn. That's my also my Instagram handle, but it's CateLuz as in zebra, IO. And those are the best places to find me.
Great. Well, thank you for your time, your amazing advice, all the t-shirt ideas. and we just really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast, Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join, and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.